It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on his teachings, passing on the meaning of all the teachings of all the great ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. People may say that the Japanese people are very tough, Roshi begins, but that is just one side of the Japanese personality. The other side is softness. Because of the Buddhist background in Japan, they've been trained that way for a long time. And he says the Japanese people are very kind. And he describes a child song with a hero called Momotaro, the Peach Boy. And once upon a time, the story goes, a woman was walking by the river, and she picked up a peach from the stream and came back to her house. And out of the peach came Momotaro. And the children sing a song. He is very strong, but very kind and gentle. Roshi said he's an ideal Japanese character. And then he's asking the students, what do you call it? There must be some word for this. And somebody, a student, says a folk hero. And he says, yes, a folk hero. And for folk hero, think bodhisattva. That's what a folk hero is. And without a soft mind, you can't be really strong. And if Momotaro didn't have that side of his character, he could not be really strong. So Roshi's making this point, when we have both a soft side and a strong side, we can be really strong, not just apparently strong. He also says readiness to be weak can be a sign of strength. Like the willow tree cannot be broken by the snow, it means the snow can bend or twist its branches, but even heavy snow can't break them. And bamboo too, it's quite weak. It looks weak, but heavy snow cannot break it. You probably know where this is going at this point. You know, it's this and that. So then darkness and brightness, absolute and relative, are also pairs of opposites. Like the front and back of feet when we walk, this is so clear. It makes it everything we've said so clear. When I say that, I mean for weeks now with the Sandokai. Roshi is saying that like the front and back feet when we walk, it's a very good way of explaining oneness or the actual function of pairs of opposites. It expresses how we apply pairs of opposites, like delusion and enlightenment, reality and idea, good and bad, weak and strong, in our everyday practice. So when you walk, the step ahead immediately becomes the step behind. And is the step with your right foot that one ahead or behind? Which is it? Which is brightness and which is darkness? It's difficult to tell. It's a very good, this is one of the best ways of describing how it actually feels, these opposite pairs that we're having such a hard time understanding. And he says that although they're pairs of opposites, they're equal as when the footstep is ahead and the other is behind, they're equal. It doesn't matter which is which, they're still equal. And when we have our own completely independent nature, our strength is absolutely equal with everyone else's. when we have our own completely independent nature, our strength is absolutely equal with everyone else's. Or another way to say that this is when you become yourself, a woman or a man, when you become yourself absolutely, you have absolute value always. No one can replace you. You have absolute value always when you become yourself absolutely. So speaking of a willow who can't be broken by the snow, Katagiri Roshi, we've talked about him last week, in his book, Returning to Silence, to this point, he relates a very sad story. An American pilot was parachuting from his airplane and was injured. Senri Ueno, a Japanese physician, was starting to operate on him when he was ordered by a senior officer to kill him. He did not obey the order and he continued to operate, but midway through, the hospital was bombed and he had to leave. And when he got back, the pilot had been stabbed to death. Nobody knew who did it. So Senri Ueno took all the blame and was executed. This is not, by the way, an uncommon thing in Japan. Even school children, if one is accused of something he didn't do, you know, you're taught to just stay quiet and just go with the flow, sort of. So he took all the blame and he was executed. And after his death, he had the true story recorded in his diary, which was found. And a week before he died, he wrote the following poem. I'm going to read this to you. You may want to hear it twice, actually. It's so beautiful. So this is a week before Senri Ueno died. He wrote this poem. Thanks to lamenting over the pain in the world, I am able to become laughter when my life is happy. Due to being struck and trampled upon and biting my lips to control my temper, I fully realize how precious it is to be born. Even if I am intentionally tired of an ugly world, look, what a blue sky. Even if one laughs scornfully at my penniless life, there is something much more beautiful, true and worthy that everyone knows. I don't care so much about anything else except love and sincerity, the sun, and a little amount of rain from time to time. If I have a healthy body and a little piece of bread, I want to walk with a smile in great spirits. I will do my best to work without complaining, but anything at all. I always consider things by putting myself in another's place without flinching, no matter how hard and heartrending it is to live. If there is someone unfortunate, I will help him out with anything. If I can forget myself to help out, that will surely delight me. In the morning, the sun rises, I greet it. I will do my best to live today. In the evening, the sun sets. Starting at the evening glow, I will want to sit still. With a little dream in my heart, I sleep as quietly as a little bird. If I have my own time, I want to spend it reading old collections of poems, meditating on them alone, quietly. Let's find happiness by ourselves, with silver tears like pearls and laughter like the sun. Let's keep walking ahead each day. Certainly, someday, as I look back over my past, I will quietly see my life with a smile. This poem, I think, is a perfect example of what Roshi says when he says, when we have both a soft side and a strong side, we can be strong in a real way, like the willow that can't be broken by the snow. And also it shows what Roshi means when he says, when you become yourself, a woman or a man, absolutely, you have absolute value always, and no one can replace you. Katagiri says the poem shows what silence is from a human perspective. But remember, he says, and I didn't know this, I was kind of surprised to hear this, in the deepest reaches of human life, there is still a vague, disconsolate pain or unsatisfactory feeling. It is very difficult to be free from this pain. It is not exactly pain, but a kind of silent lamentation inside. This is always there. Remember, that is why Buddha says life is characterized by suffering. This suffering is not the usual sense of suffering. It is quite different. This is what I was not aware of. So Katagiri means that even within silence, our silence, the human silence, there will always be a certain kind of suffering characterized by vague, disconsolate pain, a kind of silent lamentation or unsatisfactory feeling. This is clear in the poem. And this, Katagiri is saying, is what Buddha meant when in the First Noble Truth, he said, life is suffering. I think most of us, when we hear the word suffering, we have a different idea. Katagiri continues, in terms of the universe in Buddha's eye, so this is not the human perspective, this is the ultimate perspective. Silence is exactly as it isness. Roshi uses the things as it is. So Katagiri is saying, as it isness, or, and this is hyphenated, what is just is of itself. What is just is of itself. It's very quiet. Buddha's teaching always mentions this. If we want to know who we are and touch the real, silent, deep nature of our life, we must be as we really are. And how? And sitting zazen, that's how. And this is why sitting is important for Zen Buddhism. And I think in the poet's words, in the evening, the sun sets, staring at the evening glow, I want to sit still, has that quality. Katagiri says, this silence is exactly the total manifestation of our whole personality. And whole personality means our individual personality is manifested with the whole universe. all other beings are the contents of our personality. All other beings are the contents of our personality. One more time. All other beings are the contents of our personality. So when we manifest our whole personality, it is not just our individual personality, but simultaneously through this personality, we can feel the whole universe. This is why we feel magnanimity, tolerance, and compassion. And compassion, Katagiri says, is not something we try to create. We cannot do it. We cannot create compassion. Compassion comes from the measure of our practice, which we have accumulated for a long, long time. It happens naturally. So to review, silence, these two kinds of silences, silence from a human perspective, which within which is this kind of lamentation or unsatisfactory feeling, and silence from an ultimate perspective, which is what is just is of itself. What is just is of itself. That's from an ultimate perspective. So now, Robert Thurman, the great hilarious Tibetan Buddhist scholar and practitioner, who, by the way, was made a monk in 1964 by the Dalai Lama. He was ordained by the Dalai Lama. In his foreword to Katagiri's book, he makes a graphic statement on Katagiri's point and the Sandokai's point, accept all sentient beings as the contents of your life. We've been calling this interdependence. And I want to read you Robert Thurman's opening few paragraphs. So he says, Dainin Katagiri Roshi returns to silence. That's the title of his book, by the way, Returning to Silence. Dainin Katagiri Roshi returns to silence and he speaks. He is one of America's great Zen masters and he dares to begin his beautiful work when we think. And he goes on. Katagiri Roshi, this is now Robert Thurman. We're back to Robert Thurman. Katagiri Roshi is my friend. He likes me. I like him. We look at each other and feel rested, each seeing how tired the other is, sharing determination. We must always try to accept all sentient beings as the contents of our life. When I am with Katagiri, I feel as I used to when I was with my late Dharma father, great Geshe Wangyal, whom I mentioned for a purpose, for the sake of fullness and to hold nothing back. He means he's just saying, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Tibetan Buddhist, not a Zen Buddhist. So he's not to hold anything back. And as I do when I'm with some Lama friends, cheerful and content, but a bit on edge, as if many more people were there with us. When I am with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, I feel as if at least 6 million Tibetans were with us in the room and around them inconceivable multitudes of feeling beings. When I am with Katagiri Roshi, I feel the hundreds of millions of Japan, not just Japan of this moment, but Japan as it has grown over a millennium. The people of Basho's green leaf floating, the delicate people teeming on the broad green leaf in the bright sun of Vairochana's mirror of form? And woven between us all are so many people in between. And I'm going to mispronounce these, I'm sorry. Especially peoples of the snowy northlands, Yakut, Buryat, Inui, Tlingit, down to the earthy Winnebago and Ojibwas of Katagiri's Minnesota woods. All sentient beings, all feeling beings, feelings are inconceivable. Only Robert Thurman, of whom I am a big fan, could take dependent, interdependent, light, dark, conventional, absolute concepts from the Sandokai that we are grappling with all our might, and taking them totally for granted, like, of course, everyone knows that, describe his friend thusly. It's heartwarming. So the most important points are the following. When you become yourself, a woman or a man, absolutely, you have absolute value always, and no one can replace you. When we have both a soft side and a strong side, we can be strong in a real way. And I think the airplane, the Senri Ueno, the Japanese physician, shows that in his poem. Like front and back feet when we walk, this is a very good way of explaining oneness or the actual function of a pair of opposites. We must always try to accept all sentient beings as the contents of our life. And remember, that is why Buddha says life is characterized by suffering. This suffering is not the usual sense of suffering. Instead, it is characterized by vague, disconsolate pain, a kind of silent lamentation, our unsatisfactory feeling. That's life itself. That's our human experience. But it's not ultimate reality. And finally, compassion is not something we create. We cannot do it. Compassion comes from the measure of our practice, which we've accumulated for a long, long time. It naturally happens. Compassion naturally happens. Here are some things that during the week you can think about and write about. So when Robert Thurman begins his foreword, he says of Katagiri, he's one of America's great Zen masters, and he dares to begin his beautiful work when we think. That's how Katagiri, the first sentence is, when we think such and such. What is so daring about that? That's for you to reflect on during the week. What is so daring about that? And the second is, we must always try to accept all sentient beings as the contents of our life. To this end, what is your plan? What is your plan? Roshi says, readiness to be weak can be a sign of strength. Do you recognize that quality in yourself? The willow tree cannot be broken by the snow. How does that relate to you? And then this idea of when you walk, the step ahead immediately becomes the step behind. And is the step with your right foot, or is it the step ahead or the step behind? Which is it? Is it brightness or darkness? Whenever you, so here's the suggestion for you during the week. Whenever you walk, try to reflect on all the things we've been thinking about, light and dark, dependence, interdependence. Use your walking as a chance to go back to those difficult ideas. I'm remembering Robert Haas when he became poet laureate. He was upset about all the time that it would take away from his writing practice. And so he decided, whenever I'm in a moving vehicle, I'm going to write. And I'm kind of suggesting the same thing. Whenever you're walking and remembering Roshi's, using walking as a metaphor of how light and dark, interdependence, dependence, it's all mixed up. It becomes one. Functionally, using walking, whenever you're walking, to think about how this is your feet are becoming one functionally, like other things. And then finally, the last idea for you to think about is what is your favorite verse in Senri Ueno's poem? And can you say why? I'm wondering if there are questions.
Gil, so the first question that we have is, can you repeat the poem written by the Japanese physician?
Yes, I think it's a good idea. Thank you for asking. So he wrote this a week before he died. Knowing that he was being executed for a crime he didn't commit. Thanks to lamenting over the pain in the world, I am able to become laughter when my life is happy. Due to being struck and trampled upon and biting my lips to control my temper, I fully realize how precious it is to be born. Even if I am intentionally tired of an ugly world, look, what a blue sky. Even if one laughs scornfully at my penniless life, there is something much more beautiful, true, and worthy that everyone knows. I don't care so much about anything else except love and sincerity, the sun, and a little amount of rain from time to time. If I have a healthy body and a little piece of bread, I want to walk with a smile in great spirits. I will do my best to work without complaining about anything at all. I always consider things by putting myself in another's place without flinching, no matter how hard and heart-rending it is to live. If there is someone unfortunate, I will help him out with anything. If I can forget myself to help out, that will surely delight me. In the morning, the sun rises, I greet it. I will do my best to live today. In the evening, the sun sets. Staring at the evening glow, I want to sit still. With a little dream in my heart, I sleep as quietly as a little bird. If I have my own time, I want to spend it reading an old collection of poems, meditating on them alone, quietly. Let's find happiness by ourselves, within silver tears like pearls and laughter like the sun. Let's keep walking ahead each day. Certainly someday, as I look back over my past, I will quietly see my life with a smile. That's the poem.
Thank you, Gail. The next question that we have is, I don't feel that I am very compassionate. I am a very compassionate person, for which I carry a lot of shame. So when I heard today that compassion is not something that we try to create, it comes rather from the measure of our practice, which we have accumulated for a long, long time. Does this mean that if I don't have it now, I'm probably not going to have it till I accumulate it over a long, long time? This is depressing.
You are Buddha nature. And so you also are, you are, not have, you are compassion. But I'm hearing that you feel closed off from that part of yourself. If you're not sitting zazen or quieting yourself deeply, it's hard to manifest who we really are. And I think that's what's happening for you. Manifesting. So, in other words, it's not a question of you drumming up compassion. You just need to be you, absolutely. And we do that by practicing zazen or an activity or an art form where you're very, very intense. A helpful thing can be, I've been taught, and I really do believe, that statues and photographs of deities, people who have achieved spiritual merit, reflect the spiritual merit that they've achieved. So they aren't just statues or photographs. They're actually energetically giving off their merit. And so you could have one of those. I think you can see the statue on my desk of Kuan Yin. a bodhisattva of compassion. So I'm just as a support, just as a support. I hope that answers your question. You already are what you're hoping to get, but you have to manifest that by stilling yourself, seriously stilling yourself. Okay, that's all.
The next question is, when you become yourself, a woman or a man, absolutely, you have absolute value, always, and no one can replace you. How can I bring this more into my life?
The Dalai Lama suggests kindness. And that's not random. Because kindness insists on you entering another's experience. And I would suggest to work on kindness and be an awareness. So when you're aware of being kind and you're aware of when you're not, and try to figure out, so let's say you're not, and you've caught yourself and you've already done this thing that wasn't kind. Stop and see if you can figure out how you could have been more skillful. And also the other way, if you're going to do something where you risk not being kind, and I'm thinking of myself, if I have to call the bank, and I, because they made a mistake, you know, I feel like I'm going to yell at them. And so that's a time to stop and consider a more skillful approach. So like that, but that's ultimately working on manifesting kindness with awareness of when you succeed or you don't succeed. That's my answer.
Kiel, the next question is, when Buddha says life is characterized by suffering, this suffering is not the usual sense of suffering. It is quite different. Can you say a little more about that?
Well, the poem said everything about it. I don't think I can say more than the poem. It's that, just that sense of, this is not our home, you know, that there's something, there's always another thing that we have to do. There's always another, oh, I forgot to such and such, you know, always. It's always, oh, I forgot to such and such. Or, you know, I'm going to put the 10th thing on my list to do tomorrow. And it just, it's endless. It's endless. And that is our life. That's our life itself. You know, try to think of a day when that didn't happen. That's the point. That's the point. It's a kind of deep sense of the impermanence that we must bear, because it's the truth itself, impermanence and loss and all of the things that underlie our daily existence. That's what he's talking about.
Thank you, Gail. The next question is, I was raised in a fundamentalist family and went to a fundamentalist school all the way through college. Can you say more about Buddhism's relationship with God? I think I'm going to need it.
Well, I can tell you what Roshi has said. He has said, strictly teaching, Buddhists have no teaching. So we have no God or deities. We don't have anything. We have nothingness. That's all. So it all we have is our composure, really. And what kind of composure can we have? That'll be the question. And the answer is not some idea of God or a deity, but rather to understand the reality that we're facing. Who are we? Who are we? What is my mind right now as I'm listening to this lecture? What is my mind right now as I'm listening to this lecture? And when we observe things in this way, we don't need a special teaching about God, because everyone is God for a Buddhist. Moment after moment, we're facing God, and each of us is also God or Buddha. So we don't need to have any special idea about God. That's the point. We don't talk about God because, first of all, it's a really loaded term. And our business is just facing reality. And reality, real reality, is God. That's the best I can do for you.
Thank you, Gail. The next question is, can you say a little more about Momotaro or any other hero?
Yes. You know, you might have said, why is Roshi even talking about folk heroes? We're just working. Our job is to become nothing. You know, we're about when are we going to become nothing? And so why is Roshi talking about a folk hero? But folk heroes already are nothing. They've already become nothing, and Momotaro included. And then for nothing, read Bodhisattva. You know, they've lost their sense of an individual self, of an individual existence. And so there's no self, and they're just selfless beings. And that's Momotaro. And there's a lot of we've talked about invisible practice in previous talks. Invisible practice is anything you do that only shows up if you don't do it. So if you're walking by a trash can on the street and there's a lot of trash on the ground and you keep walking, then anyone looking knows that you didn't take the trouble to pick up the trash. And you can say, well, it's not my responsibility. But just think about that. And you can think about that in terms of Momotaro also. That's all.
The next question is, since the truth of all other beings are the contents of one's personality, is a truth beyond the grasp of the human mind, how should I work with it? It's hard even to remember it.
You may not like to hear this, but again, it's that real depth of silence. It's a real, because this is actually who you are. You actually, that's why I read you the Robert Thurman passage of when he's around the Dalai Lama, there's, you know, there's trillions of other people in the room. And the same with Katagiri Roshi and really all great beings. You can feel the presence of so many others because they have manifested all other beings as the contents of their personality. And the way they've done it is by quieting themselves. And this is why Zazen becomes so important. It's a very good way of shedding all the things interfering in being one with the contents of all other personalities. That's all.
Gail, the next comment that we have is, I wonder if the deep suffering or permanent sense of dissatisfaction that all life feels may be the force that motivates life to do anything. For example, the amoeba must also feel some need that it tries to satisfy, or a tree probably feels it needs more light or more water and acts to satisfy itself. It makes me wonder if everyone became Buddha and ended suffering, what would the world be like?
I know. You know, everyone is Buddha. We just have to allow that, really. We have to become aware of that and allow it. That makes it even more painful. If what you just said were really the case, what would the world be like? And yet it actually is the case. Only we kind of can't get there. It is sad. It's the whole thing. It's a sad story. Sort of like this Japanese physician. It's a sad story.
Thank you, Gail. That was the last question.
Okay. Thank you for being here today. And I'll resume next Sunday. Bye-bye.